Dear Doctor, but this is not a letter for the doctor only. I would like to say a few words to the keeper of my conscience, or better still, simply to a human being who seems to me to have both heart and brains equally developed. I want to beg of you once more to be truthful to me, to treat me as a sensible being, not a weak-minded woman, which I claim not to be. And just as you would tell your man-patient that he had better make his arrangements to leave if he asked that question, I want to be told when the time comes. We always fear the unknown. I am not a coward, and I do not fear death, which to me means nothing more than sleep. But I cannot become resigned to leave this beautiful world with all the treasures it holds for me and for everyone who knows how to understand and appreciate them. I do not like the idea of dying in the spirit of revolt, which is now my chief feeling. But I think if I have time to get accustomed to the idea, I may be wise enough to resign myself humbly to the inevitable. I find it more worthy, and would like to leave a good example to those I love, this being my only understanding of immortality. My dear cousin, I cannot for the life of me remember saying to Leslie there is no God. It is an expression I would be quite unlikely to use, as I fully realise that none of us can know. I may have said, I do not believe there is a God who arranges our lives for us, which is quite different. Surely your boy need not put more weight on what I believe than on what you and his father believe. And if his faith is so easily influenced by someone he casually sees for the first time when 11 years old, there can be no difficulty in his faith being influenced again by his parents. Besides, you can have the help of the clergy and the churches if really your aim in life is to saddle him with a belief that requires blind faith and blind submission. I recognise it was not my place to tell Leslie about the birth of children, but you must remember that when I mentioned it to him, I never doubted that he had been already told about it by you. I shall, however, follow your advice and leave other people's children alone in the future, unless I know that their parents' views agree with ours on cardinal points. When first I knew my death was at hand, I stood facing the blank, black wall. Sobbing, I hammered at it, and with set teeth and clenched fist, attempted to knock it down. To my vain and tired effort, it seemed but to increase in gloom and immovability, until my tear-dimmed eye perceived entrenched there not only the lawful strength of immutable death, but greediness for its prey, the longing to crush me at once, even before my time, and pitiless joy over one more poor mortal's discomfiture. Then I revolted against so much unnecessary cruelty, and turned from it in disgust. I vowed that wall should not crush me. Bad enough to die at my age. While life is mine, I mean to live. I lived with my gaze steadily fixed on those around me, and had the happiness of seeing the cloud of sadness gradually lift from beloved faces, and peace and cheerfulness come back into our home. My children's recollections of early childhood will not be marred by me. Then, life. The life I now live. The life my loved ones will live after I have left them. The life of millions who will live long after we have vanished. We, but not our thought, our striving, our influence. Life got hold of me again. Life holds me now. More than ever before, universal, bounteous life took me in its strong arm to its trusted, palpitating breast, and from that harbour of love, of strength and hope, I dared look at last. A pleasant dream to you. Dream of my vision. Good night.